Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corn. So we chatted in a previous episode about the topic of indoor air quality after the mold leak of 2025. And as I keep mentioning, the reason that I'm making a number of episodes about this is not to keep talking about this issue indefinitely, but rather because I think it's always something I've wanted to get on top of, the question of indoor air quality as an asthmatic. And this seems like as good a time as any, or a great time, in fact, to learn about it, as we have an immediate need. So there's two things I'd like to talk about in greater depth than what we did in the previous episode. Two sides, I guess, of the same coin. One is indoor air quality monitoring, and the second one is indoor air quality treatment using HEPA filters. On the first side, I'm actually looking now. I managed to dig out, of course, if there's a gadget that's electronic, I probably bought it. And this is one where, speaking about my decluttering attempts, I thought about throwing this out. And I decided, no, I might use it one time. And it's here it is, just when I needed it. It's an air quality monitor. And I'm looking at a screen, which you can't see, but I'll describe exactly what it says. HCHO 0.001. It says that's good. TVOC, total volatile organic compound, 0.007. It says that's also good. For reference, this is in our living room. PM2.5, 191 nanograms per square meter. It says that is not good. It says slight, actually. PM10, 254. Same metric. CO, 3 ppm. CO2 410 ppm. So that's what I'm seeing. And the readings in the bedroom are a bit higher than that. But those PM levels seem pretty high for an indoor room, especially compared to outdoor ones. But what are the generally accepted safe parameters? Now, I mentioned having asthma, but I also don't want to, I want to have my asthma sufficiently under control that I'm not, you know, that I'm trying to keep it within normal parameters for healthy people, basically. So that's side one. What are we looking at? Are those the right variables to be tracking? And what are the ranges that we're looking for? And what would different levels mean? For example, if the TVOC level there was really high, or I gather that the HCHO is related a lot to building materials, how do you interpret those numbers? Second thing is HEPA filters. We talked about wanting to size one. I think you mentioned there's medical grade ones. And is the sizing process simply a case of we're trying to figure out how much air volume the room has to determine the, I forget the acronym, C, begins with a C, Herman Poppleberry will know it. So I can pretty easily use a laser measure, calculate the cubic meters of air in the room. And then what am I going for in terms of capacity? How do you size it? Herman and Corin, let's talk today about a very neglected topic, indoor air quality. We spend so much of our life breathing air inside of buildings. And let's talk about those two sides of the picture, monitoring it. And if you buy a decent air quality monitor, our air quality filter, HEPA filter, a lot of them I know come with built-in monitors. So you might get your intro to everything in one product if you're in the market for a HEPA filter, as we are at the moment. So Herman and Corin, let's talk about air quality monitoring and filtration in today's episode of My Weird Prompts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I'm Corin, and I am joined as always by my brother, the man who probably knows more about the particulate matter in this room than the air itself. We are coming to you from our home in Jerusalem, where the air is currently a delightful mix of ancient history and modern exhaust.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And honestly, Korn, after that mold situation we dealt with last year, which our longtime listeners will remember from episode 320, I think we all became a little bit obsessed with what we are breathing in. It is February 2nd, 2026, and the winter dust storms have been particularly brutal this week.
It is true. Living in Jerusalem, you get a lot of dust, a lot of ancient stone particles, and then, of course, the modern city life. But our housemate Daniel really took it to the next level this week. He sent us a prompt that is basically a deep dive into the alphabet soup of air quality monitoring and the physics of HEPA filters.
I love this prompt because it moves us from the theoretical, is the air bad, to the practical, how do we measure and fix it? Daniel mentioned he is looking at his monitor and seeing numbers for HCHO, TV, OC, PM2.5, PM10, carbon monoxide, and carbon dioxide. It can be incredibly overwhelming to see all those acronyms flashing on a little screen and not know if you should be running for the hills or just opening a window.
Right. And he specifically mentioned that as an asthmatic, these numbers aren't just trivia for him. They are a matter of daily comfort and health. So, Herman, I want to start with that monitor. Daniel gave us some of his readings. He said his PM2.5 was at 191 and his PM10 was at 254. When I heard those numbers, my first thought was, that sounds high, but how high is it really?
Korn, those numbers aren't just high. They are firmly in the very unhealthy to hazardous range. To put this in perspective, the World Health Organization updated their guidelines back in 2021, and those standards are still the gold standard today in 2026. They suggest that the 24-hour average for PM2.5 should not exceed 15 micrograms per cubic meter. Daniel is seeing 191. That is nearly 13 times the recommended daily limit. If he were outside, the local authorities would be issuing a red alert health advisory.
Okay, let's back up for a second for the listeners who might be where I was a few years ago. What exactly are PM2.5 and PM10? Why are we measuring them in microns, and why does the size matter so much?
That is the crucial question. PM stands for particulate matter. The number refers to the diameter of the particle in micrometers or microns. So, PM10 are particles, 10 micrometers or smaller. Think of things like dust, pollen, and mold spores. They are small, but your body has some defenses against them. Your nose and throat can filter out a lot of PM10 before it reaches your lungs.
But PM2.5 is the real villain of the story, right?
Exactly. PM2.5 particles are 2.5 micrometers or smaller. To give you a visual, they are about 30 times smaller than the width of a human hair. Because they are so tiny, they don't get stopped in your upper respiratory tract. They travel deep into the lungs, into the alveoli, and can even enter the bloodstream. This is why high levels of PM2.5 are linked to heart disease, lung cancer, and of course, severe asthma attacks. In Daniel's case, breathing air at 191 micrograms per cubic meter is like living in a room where someone is constantly idling a diesel truck.
That is a terrifying image. Now, Daniel's monitor uses a laser scattering sensor to find those particles, right? How does a little plastic box actually see something 30 times smaller than a hair?
It is actually quite brilliant. Most consumer monitors use a laser beam and a light sensor. As air is pulled through the device by a tiny fan, the particles pass through the laser beam. The particles scatter the light, and the sensor measures the intensity and pattern of that scattering. The device then uses an algorithm to estimate the mass and size of the particles. It is not as accurate as a $10,000 laboratory-grade gravimetric sampler, but for home use, it is more than enough to tell you that you have a problem.
So if Daniel is seeing 191 in the living room, something is definitely wrong. It could be cooking, it could be smoke from outside, or it could be related to that mold issue. But he also mentioned HCHO and TVOC. Those sound like something out of a chemistry textbook.
They are. HCHO is the chemical formula for formaldehyde. It is a specific type of volatile organic compound, or VOC. TVOC stands for total volatile organic compounds. This is basically a catch-all measurement for all the gaseous pollutants in the air. We are talking about things that off-gas from your furniture, your carpets, your cleaning supplies, and even that new car smell.
I remember we touched on this in episode 252, when we were looking at respirators. Formaldehyde is particularly nasty because it is a known carcinogen, and it is everywhere. It is in the glues used in pressed wood furniture and in some fabrics. Daniel's reading for HCHO was 0.001, which is actually quite good. Generally, the World Health Organization wants to keep formaldehyde below 0.1 milligrams per cubic meter to prevent sensory irritation.
Right? And his TVOC was 0.007, which is also very low. Usually, anything below 0.5 milligrams per cubic meter is considered good, and once you hit 3.0, you are in the unhealthy range, where people start getting sick building syndrome symptoms like headaches and itchy eyes. So, what is interesting here is that Daniel's air is chemically very clean in terms of gases, but it is physically very dirty in terms of particles. This is a perfect example of why you need a multi-sensor monitor. If he only had a VOC sensor, he would think his air was perfect. Meanwhile, he is breathing in a massive amount of particulate matter.
That is a great point. It shows that air quality isn't just one score. It is a profile. You can have a house that smells like a pine forest but is full of invisible smoke particles. Or a house that has zero dust but is off-gassing toxic fumes from a new sofa. Now, what about the big two? Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide.
Carbon monoxide, or CO, is the one everyone should be terrified of. It is the silent killer. It is colorless, odorless, and it displaces oxygen in your blood. Daniel's reading was 3 parts per million. That is safe. Most household detectors don't even alarm until you hit 30 or 50 parts per million, though even low-level exposure over a long time isn't great. If you see CO climbing, you have a combustion problem. Maybe a gas stove is leaking or a water heater isn't venting correctly.
And then there is CO2 carbon dioxide. This is the one that makes you feel stuffy in a meeting room, right?
Exactly. Carbon dioxide is mostly a proxy for ventilation. We breathe it out. If the CO2 levels are high, it means you are breathing in a lot of secondhand air. Daniel's reading was 410 parts per million. That is basically outdoor air quality. It is perfect. For reference, once you hit 1,000 parts per million, people start to feel drowsy and lose focus. At 2,000, you might start getting headaches. Daniel's low CO2 tells us that his house is actually very well ventilated, which makes the high particle count even more mysterious. If he is getting fresh air in, why are the particles so high?
Maybe the fresh air from outside in Jerusalem is actually the source of the dust.
That is very likely. If there is a construction site nearby or a constant wind blowing in from the desert, opening the window for ventilation might actually be making the PM2.5 levels worse.
So, looking at Daniel's data, we have a clear diagnosis. His ventilation is great low CO2. His chemical safety is great low VOCs and CO. But his particulate count is through the roof. This is where the second part of his prompt comes in, the HEPA filter. He wants to know how to size one properly. Herman, I know you have a whole spreadsheet for this. How do we move from the air is dusty to, I need this specific machine?
This is where we talk about CADR, or the clean air delivery rate. This is the most important metric for any air purifier. Forget the coverage area the manufacturer puts on the box in big, bold letters. That is usually marketing fluff based on the lowest possible air exchange rate. To really clean the air, especially for an asthmatic, you need to look at the CADR.
CADR is measured in cubic feet per minute, or cubic meters per hour, right? How does that relate to the size of the room?
It is all about the air changes per hour, or ACH. If you have a room, you want to replace all the air in that room with filtered air, a certain number of times every hour. For a healthy person in a normal environment, 2 or 3 times might be okay. But for someone with asthma, or when you have high particulate counts like Daniel is seeing, you want at least 5 air changes per hour. Some experts even recommend 6 or 7 for allergy sufferers.
Okay, let's do some math for Daniel. Let's assume he is in a standard bedroom. If the room is 4 meters by 4 meters with a ceiling height of 2.5 meters, that gives us a volume of 40 cubic meters.
Right, so if he wants 5 air changes per hour, he needs to move 5 times 40 cubic meters. That is 200 cubic meters per hour. So he needs to look for a HEP A filter with a CADR of at least 200 for smoke or dust. If he were in a larger living room, say 6 by 6 meters with a 3 meter ceiling, that is 108 cubic meters, 5 changes there would require a CADR of 540. That is a much bigger, more expensive machine.
I think one thing people get wrong is that they see a filter rated for a large room, and they put it on the quiet or low setting because the high setting is too loud. But the CADR is only valid for the highest setting, isn't it?
Precisely. This is a huge misconception. If a purifier is rated at 400 cubic meters per hour on high, it might only be doing 80 on low. If you can't stand the noise of the high setting, you actually need to buy a much larger unit so that its medium or low setting provides the CADR you actually need. I always tell people to overspec their purifiers. If your room needs 300, buy a unit that does 600. You can run it on medium, it stays quiet, and you actually get the air changes you need to stay healthy.
That is a total aha moment for me. We often think of appliances like a light bulb. It is either on or off. But an air purifier is more like a fan. The volume of work it does is directly tied to the speed of the motor. Now, Daniel specifically asked about HEPA. We hear that term everywhere. Is every filter that claims to be HEPA type actually doing the job?
No, and this is where you have to be careful. True HEPA is a specific standard. It must capture 99.97% of particles that are 0.3 microns in diameter. The reason we use 0.3 microns as the benchmark is because that is actually the hardest size to catch. Larger particles get stuck in the fibers like a fly in a web. Tiny particles move in a zigzag pattern called Brownian motion and eventually hit a fiber. But those 0.3 micron particles are just the right size to potentially slip through. If a filter can catch those, it can catch almost anything.
I'm curious about the historical context here, Herman. HEP, A filters weren't originally designed for people's living rooms, right? I seem to remember they have a much more intense origin story.
They do. They were actually developed during the Manhattan Project in the 1940s, the U.S. Army Chemical Corps and the National Defense Research Committee needed a way to filter out radioactive particles from the air to protect the scientists working on the atomic bomb. They were originally called absolute filters. It was top secret technology for a long time. The researchers, including Nobel laureate Irving Langmuir, were the ones who identified 0.3 microns as the most penetrating particle size. It took decades for it to trickle down to vacuum cleaners and eventually to these sleek home air purifiers we see today. It is a bit wild to think that the technology Daniel is using to manage his asthma is the same basic principle used to contain nuclear fallout.
That puts a different spin on it. I'm not just cleaning the air, I'm using Manhattan Project technology. But let's get practical for a second. If Daniel is going to buy a filter, what else should be in the box? I see some with multiple layers.
A good system should have at least three stages. First, a pre-filter. This is usually a mesh or foam layer that catches the big stuff, pet hair, giant dust bunnies. This saves your expensive HEPA filter from getting clogged too fast. Second, an activated carbon layer. This is crucial for VOCs. Even though Daniel's VOC levels are low right now, carbon is what absorbs smells, smoke chemicals, and gases that the HEPA filter can't touch. And third, the true HEPA filter itself for the particles.
What about the medical grade, HEPA filters? I think Daniel mentioned seeing those advertised. Is that just more marketing?
Usually, when people say medical grade, they are referring to H13 or H14 HEPA filters. Standard HEPA is often H12. The difference is the efficiency. H12 catches 99.97%. H13 catches 99.95% of even smaller increments. It is a small percentage difference on paper, but when you are dealing with millions of particles, that extra 0.05% can matter in a clinical setting. For a home, a standard H12 true HEPA is usually more than enough, provided the CADR is right. Don't pay double for an H13 if the CADR is half of what you need.
So we have the monitor giving us the why, and the CADR math giving us the how. But I want to go back to Daniel's specific situation. His PM levels were incredibly high. If he puts a HEPA filter in that room, how long does it take to actually see those numbers drop? Is it instantaneous?
not quite. It is a process of dilution. Think of it like a bucket of dirty water and you are pouring in clean water while the dirty water drains out. In the first 15 to 20 minutes, you should see a significant drop if the unit is sized correctly. If it is running on the right, CADR, you might see that 191 drop to under 50 within a half hour. But here is the thing most people realize too late. If the source of the pollution is still there, the numbers will go right back up the moment you turn the filter off.
Right. And that brings up an interesting point about the second-order effects of air monitoring. If Daniel sees his PM2.5 spike every time he pries an egg, the solution isn't just a better HEPA filter. It is a better range hood or opening a window while cooking. The monitor teaches you about your habits.
Exactly. I've seen people who realize their vacuum cleaner was actually a dust fountain. They would vacuum the floor and their PM2.5 would skyrocket because the vacuum didn't have a sealed HEPA exhaust. They were just picking up big dust and spraying out fine, dangerous particles. Without the monitor, they would have never known. Daniel mentioned his bedroom readings were even higher than the living room. That is a huge red flag.
Why is that? You'd think the bedroom would be cleaner since there is less activity.
Usually, yes. But bedrooms have mattresses and carpets, which are massive reservoirs for dust mites and skin cells. If Daniel has an old mattress or a thick rug, every time he sits on the bed, he is launching a particle cloud into the air. Or, given our history in this house, there could be a moisture issue behind a wardrobe feeding mold spores directly into his sleeping area. Since he spends 8 hours a night there, that is where the damage is being done.
You know, it is fascinating how much our perspective has shifted. We used to just think of fresh air as something you get by opening a window. But in a modern city like Jerusalem, sometimes the outdoor air is worse than the indoor air.
And that is why the combination of monitoring and filtration is so powerful. It gives you agency. You aren't just a victim of whatever is floating around. You can see the data, you can do the math on the room volume, and you can create a literal safe space for your lungs. For someone with asthma, that isn't just a luxury. It is a fundamental improvement in quality of life.
So, to summarize the action plan for Daniel and anyone else in this boat, first, interpret the monitor as a whole. Don't panic over one number, but look for the outliers. For Daniel, it is the particulate matter. Second, do the math. Measure your room. Calculate the volume in cubic meters, and multiply by 5 to get your target CADR. Third, buy a unit that can hit that CADR comfortably without sounding like a jet engine.
And fourth, use the monitor to find the source. Is it the carpet? Is it the cooking? Is it coming from the vents? Move the monitor around. Put it near the bed. Put it near the window. Put it inside a closet. The data will lead you to the culprit. AHEP. A filter is a cure for the symptoms, but the monitor can help you find the cause.
I think this is where we are seeing a real revolution in home health. 10 years ago, you couldn't get a monitor that measured PM2.5 and VOCs for a reasonable price. Now, they are everywhere. But as Daniel's prompt shows, having the data is only half the battle. You have to know what the numbers mean.
It is the democratization of science, in a way. We are all becoming amateur air quality scientists. And while it might seem nerdy to talk about microns and cubic meters per hour, the result is something very human, being able to take a deep breath without coughing.
That is a beautiful way to put it, Herman. And honestly, after the mold saga we went through, I don't think I'll ever take a deep breath for granted again.
Agreed. And I think we should mention that if you are looking for specific recommendations on filters or more deep dives into the science, we have covered some of this in the past. Episode 320 really goes into the aftermath of mold, which is something Daniel is clearly still thinking about.
Definitely. And episode 252 is great for understanding the different types of filters and what they actually stop. We've spent a lot of time thinking about the air in this house.
Maybe too much time?
Is there such a thing? I mean, we're still here, aren't we?
Fair point.
Before we wrap up, I want to touch on one more thing. Daniel's HCHO reading of 0.001. Is it possible his sensor is just broken? That seems almost too low for a modern house.
It is possible. Consumer VOC sensors often use a metal oxide semiconductor, or MOX. These sensors are notoriously finicky. They can be cross-sensitive to humidity or even high levels of CO2. If the sensor hasn't been calibrated in a while, it might just be bottoming out. I'd suggest Daniel take his monitor outside for 20 minutes to let it baseline in the fresh air. If it still reads 0.001 inside after that, then he really does have the cleanest air in Jerusalem, chemically speaking at least.
Good tip. Well, Herman, I think I'm going to go check the filters on our purifiers now. You've made me a little paranoid.
My work here is done.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time. This was episode 420, and we are so glad you joined our weird little community today.
Stay curious and breathe easy.
See you later.
Take care, everyone.
One last thing, Herman. Did you ever find out what that smell in the hallway was?
I'm still monitoring it, Korn. The TVOCs are stable, but the mystery remains. It might just be the neighbors cooking.
Of course it does. All right, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
And don't forget, if you are in Jerusalem, the dust is real. Keep those HEPA filters running. You can find all our past episodes and our full archive at myweirdprompts.com. Use the contact form to send us your own prompts.
We are always looking for the next deep dive. Whether it is technical, philosophical, or just plain weird, we want to hear it.
Absolutely. All right, signing off for real this time. Thanks again for listening to My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify and at myweirdprompts.com. See you in the next one.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.